This show is part of the Pika Science Podcast, studying the intersection of video games and science.
Coming to you live from a radio tower near you, studying the intersections of video games and science, this is PokeScience.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Jared.
Hey.
Hi, Jared.
Oh my god. Should have known that by how I opened it. This is going to be different. It's not through the ultra wormhole. It's actually a Pokey normal episode. It's actually Pokey Science and not my own thing.
I liked the wormhole, though. It was fun.
It was a lot of fun. Getting a little switch away from that. We're going to talk, instead of talking about things that a lot of people don't like to talk about, to deal with, we're going to be talking about things that people like to go see and look at and own. Well, I own Lego versions of. I don't have any real ones in the house right now, but I have fake ones. We're going to be talking about flowers today.
And the ones that you can and cannot eat.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We always have to bring up eating somewhere in these episodes.
Do you know that story about Chloe?
No.
So when Chloe first came to live with Kristen and I, we have all sorts of flowers in our yard. And you know this because you helped me, for listeners who don't know, Jared helped me try to save a peach tree once in my yard, which
I actually forgot about that,
which failed miserably, and I ended up ruining part of my yard.
I had forgotten about that.
You showed me how to do an irrigation system.
Yeah,
I had to build the irrigation system into the hill that my house is built on.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I still have the pipe that runs down and out the hill, like it goes through the mountain.
Yep.
I forgot about that. Chloe was eating random flowers in our backyard.
Oh, joy.
And threw up all over the deck 20 minutes later.
Yeah, that'll happen because not all of them you can eat. Daffodils, dandelions, they're pretty good. You can eat them.
My tea right here is dandelion.
Yeah. But there's things that you definitely don't.
You cannot eat. Daffodils you cannot eat.
No, daffodils you cannot.
I'm pretty sure that's what she ate.
Is this spoilers for later?
It might be.
Hey, at least it's not Jimson weed. At least we're okay there.
Don't eat Vileplume. Yes, eat Sunflora.
Yes. Well, I think Vileplume would I think the smell alone might you might not want to get near to that anyways.
I mean, some people might be into that.
Well, just because something smells bad doesn't mean it doesn't taste good. I think cheese smells horrible, but I do think it tastes good.
Well, yeah, it's stinky tofu. Ugh.
Nope.
And durian.
Yeah, I haven't tried it yet, though. It's on my list.
Anyways, so we're talking flowers, so I guess we should probably answer the most important question.
What is a flower?
What are flowers? So flowers are actually, they're a reproductive structure, so I guess before getting into that, with plants, there are a bunch of different types of plants. And then there's different, like, you have your gymnosperms, your angiosperms, you have bryophytes, lycophytes, and I'm forgetting one. I think it's just the ferns. I don't remember the name of them off the top of my head. It's been a while. But
Jared, what are bryophytes versus lycophytes versus gymnosperms?
So your bryophytes are like your mosses. I think ferns are actually lycophytes. It's different reproduction. Your gymnosperms are your like your woody trees that have seeds. So the big thing that goes over for bryophytes and lycophytes is they don't have seed production. Once you get into your gymnosperms and then your angiosperms, you get seeds. You get naked seeds, so that seeds that aren't covered by a fruit. And then once you get to your angiosperms, that's your flowering plants that have fruits that protect the sperm and the egg, the fertilization. So that's like the big difference there. It's the differences in reproduction is the whole thing between the three, between those different groups. So flowers are actually the reproductive structure that are flowering in plants.
Which is why when I gave flowers to Lila's other mom in college, she looked and said, ew, the reproductive organs of plants. That's weird.
They are I don't want to get into that, but I kind of do, but I don't. They are a very interesting choice of, ooh, this is really pretty, but also it's literally to help. What was it? I think it was a video we had to watch in college that was called How Plants Have Sex, and that was the whole video on pollination and flowers. And that's literally the title of it. And it was all it did was talked about flowers. But that is where your pollen is kept, which is kept in the part. We'll talk more about the flower parts later in the anthers. And then that's where the gametophytes, the sperm and the egg, actually are made and kept. So these are from angiosperms. They are the most diverse group of land plants. There are over 300,000 known species. So these could be bushes, shrubs, flowers. We'll talk into more about like the Pokemon that exist that are these types of plants. But they are found all throughout. They are the most diverse. So angiosperm means a plant that produces seeds in an enclosure, which is a fruit, which makes sense when we're talking about, like, of course, good old cherubi and cherum. So the good cherries, so that's, of course, a fruit. And just kind of a cool
Don't
fact.
Don't forget Smoliv.
You know, I wanted to talk about Smoliv, but also I would rather just do an entire food-based episode of what you can eat in the Pokemon world. And Smoliv would be great along to go along with that. But yeah, Smoliv is one.
You eat your Phyto with Smoliv oil.
Phyto, no. No. I love my Phyto. He's... But yes, but no. So, we know what flowers are. What are they actually used for? They are used to help in pollination and reproduction, as notices. They're great. They attract, of course, your pollinators, which, of course, you can see all throughout your backyards or anywhere you keep them in the pollination garden. If you have, like, a pollination garden, like we do at home. Well, we did. I think some of them kind of died, unfortunately. But we have, like, your hummingbirds, your bees, your different butterflies, your different insects, stuff like that. That's the whole reason what flowers are used for a lot for attracting your different types of pollinators. So how do they help the plants survive? Because that's important, because we need to learn how plants have to survive to keep on growing. So flowers produce seeds and fruits, which are used for helping passing on genes for reproduction, for new plants to grow, to keep lineages going on, which for plants to help survive, they also need help from other organisms. So how are flowers helpful to animals? They are, well, they're food. We kind of talked about olives already and cherries, but they're insects. They help feed insects, birds, bats for nectar. I think one of the cool ones is it's called the bee orchid, not orchard. It looks like a female bee on the flower. So it actually draws in male bees to help pollinate it, which is really cool. You saw that about with the different flower shapes. You see like the trumpet shapes, which are used mostly like hummingbirds for their feeding to help with pollination. And then, of course, they are also eaten as a food source by lots of other different animals. Deer and rabbits, they are notorious for destroying our flower gardens here.
That's why we have to have a fence. The deer, you know, eat everything.
You know, I tried that, and we had the deer fence, and the deer went over top of the fence and ate them so anyways.
That's why you get a dog. I joke, I have the dog to take care of the deer, and I have the cat to take care of the mice.
Yeah, we have a dog, and the deer don't come through. They like to sit in the front yard now. They just don't go in the backyard where she marks a lot of her territory, but they're still around. They still come through the yard all the time.
Last year we redid our entire front yard, last year we redid the entire front bed. It is now all herbs. Oops, all herbs. And we put lavender out. I read that lavender deters deer. So I have lavender like every 3 feet.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Jared, I have a question.
Yeah.
So every year my mom buys this beautiful big pot of mums, and every year she doesn't learn her lesson because I get a text message or a phone call about the same time every year with her telling me the deer have eaten all of her mums. And I've seen this phenomenon in action. They seem to only eat the flower heads, the parts with the petals. And I was wondering if you had any insight as to why they're just eating the flowers and not really the vegetative part of the plant.
Hmm.
It's okay if you don't know. I always thought it was so interesting. They only ate the flower heads.
I actually don't know. I know with the flowers.
I mean, why do you only eat the broccoli crown? Why don't you eat the rest of the broccoli, Jillian? Come on. What are you doing?
It's probably just taste or bitterness. Maybe the stems to like the deer itself could be more bitter. That could be why. It could just be also the most nutritious parts of it are from the flower head itself. I actually don't know off the top of my head. I know someone's definitely looked into it before, but I don't know. Not off of the top of my head. I know that I've watched deer eat jalapeno peppers before, which is one of the funniest things in the world because I've watched watched a deer go. I watched a deer go out of our yard really pissed off because it was it lit its mouth on fire pretty much by eating one of them.
Wait, what?
We had a true story. I was in the backyard of our house, in our living room, in our kitchen, and a deer walked in our backyard, and we had a hot wave of jalapeno peppers on our backyard. And it ate one of the peppers, and the next thing I know is the deer is taking off running, and I'm trying to figure out where the heck it's going. It just took off running. I think it looked it. I'm betting it ate the jalapeno, got a hot one, and then just took off because it was trying to get down because we have a creek nearby our house where there's water. So I was guessing it was probably going down there.
The other deer deterrent is jalapenos. Got it.
Apparently, just hot peppers work.
Ghost peppers. If you really hate the deer.
If you really hate the deer. No, just.
So back to flowers, though.
Just back to flowers. So. What do flowers have to... So we talked about flowers, what they are. And then I talked about a big component of why it's a angiosperm and not a gymnosperm is, yes, they both produce beads, but these have fruit. So what do flowers have to do with fruit? So when fertilization happens, pollination, the ovary is what forms into the fruit to actually protect the seed, which is the zygote in the center of it. So when... The fruit contains the seeds, which when ripened become fleshy or hard, depending on the plant. So the fruit is actually is literally the ripened ovary of a seed-bearing plant. So they're used as a way to actually protect the structure for the seeds, to actually be a food source for the seeds inside of it, for the zygote. Yes, I saw that look. Yes, they are actually there used as like a food source because
Is this like how when one twin eats the other twin in utero? Your brother's thing?
I haven't thought about that show in a long time.
That's a problem.
Yeah. But yes, actually, because like there's a process where you can have, there's just double fertilization, which is you have actually two sperm combine with another ovary that forms the endosperm. But yeah, it's a food source for this the zygote, which is growing inside because the seed is actually what, you know, is the reproduction part of a plant. That's what you plant. That's what grows a new plant of. And when you actually have that double fertilization, a kind of a cool thing is that the second sperm creates the endosperm, and the endosperm is starchy, and that's what you actually use in like wheat, and you grind it up into bread. While if you use it in barley, that's the main source of sugar for beer. Just I thought it was kind of a cool fact. But
I think the main ingredient for beer is love.
Yes, it's love. It's love to get you to drink more of it. But
I mean, if it's good beer, you shouldn't need love or encouragement.
There's no love drink in an IPA. I don't taste any love in that.
I love IPAs. I'm not going to lie. If it's done right, done right. Also, children, don't drink. Adults, drink responsibly, please.
Please and thank you. So if we're going to talk flowers, we got to talk Pokemon. That is the whole point of this show. The whole point is to talk about science and Pokemon. So I want to talk about the first one we're going to talk about is actually the first flower Pokemon that I got to deal with because I'm a Gen 3 kid, and that would be Roselia. Does anyone know anything about Roselia?
It's a rose.
Yes.
Rosaceae. That's the family name.
Yes. So they are based on...
I know that roses are not fun to touch because they're very pricky, but those aren't thorns, right? Right, right. I think you've explained this to me before. There's a difference between thorns, barbs, thistles. I don't remember any of it, but I know you've taught me this before.
You know, I'm glad you bring that up because I was going to talk about it again. I talked about it almost 4 years ago now, and I'll bring it up again. Okay. So... The great song of every rose has its thorns is wrong. They don't have thorns. They have prickles.
I don't
think
they were going for scientific accuracy with the song.
No, I do not think they were either. But roses actually have prickles. So a thorn is actually like a modified branch or stem that sticks out. So like your citrus trees would have those. Prickles are actually like extensions of the epidermis of a plant. So that's what you see there. That's actually like an extension of it. So every rose has its prickles. Not every rose has its thorns. But yes, Roselia is based on roses. They are mostly native to Asia. However, there are some natives that are found in Europe, North America. They are grown for their beauty and cultural significance. I know around Valentine's Day, they are probably, or actually are the most sold flower for being the red roses that you see for love. Though they come in different colors, such as orange.
Unless you're in Holland, and then it's tulips.
Yes. Those factories are so... Not factories. Those fields are super cool. I love the tulip fields.
And you gotta go crazy for them. Tulip craziness.
Oh, yeah. They are also used in cooking for rose water. And they are like what we would call your ornamental plants. They look good. It's kind of the easiest way I ever want to describe an ornamental plant is they are just, they look good. They're for your garden. They're what you want there. Another plant that looks really cool and is the sunflower. And I hope everyone knows what Pokemon I'm talking about when I say a sunflower.
Vileplume.
Yes, absolutely, Madison. It's definitely Vileplume. It's a good old Sunflora and poor little Sunkern, the worst Sunflora Pokemon. Sunflora
was only useful in the Gold and Silver Pokemon Adventure manga. Only time it's been useful. That's it.
I say, what doesn't Sunkern have the lowest base stat total of every Pokemon? Yes. It's 30s across the board.
Yeah, its stats and its move pool make Sunflora so bad that even in Gold and Silver original Gen 2 meta, it's complete trash.
Yep.
There's almost no niche for it to fill because it just doesn't have anything to work with. But in the manga, for whatever reason, Gold's Sunflora is incredibly powerful.
They decided to give it some redeeming quality in the end. Or we try.
Mega Sunflora, guys. Come on, Mega Sunflora.
Yeah, it'll actually make it finally somewhat usable. Give it an extra 100 stats somewhere. That'll be, what, finally in the 400s?
Give it like a base attack of 162.
You know, I didn't realize. So I went to a conference in California, and when I flew in, they had fields of sunflowers. And as someone who comes from the Midwest, that was such a pleasant shock to me because I had no idea. And I guess I didn't consider sunflowers as part of agriculture, but it makes sense, right? We eat sunflower seeds. There's lots of things that sunflower seeds are used in, from the oils to eating the seeds themselves. And I thought that was so interesting the first time I visited California.
That whole agriculture. I had never like really been thought about it until I realized it, because where I live in PA, you have people that use it as a like cover crop in the fall after they've done harvest. They'll plant sunflowers, and it's really weird because then you see these random patches of sunflower fields start to pop up, and which I always thought was like really cool. But yeah, the whole agriculture behind a literal like flower that you see that you would never think of, oh, it has agricultural importance, so you realize sunflower oil, yeah, or of course sunflower seeds, especially if you're an athlete and you played baseball, that was like probably your bread and butter when you were in the dugout. I know that for as a fact.
I still eat them on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I'd say people still love them even outside of it. They're really important. They can also grow really tall, which is really cool. Also, I love the name. So Helianthus annus, so it's off of being an annual, because it is an annual flower. It is an annual, so it grows and dies every year and doesn't come back. You have to replant it the next year. And then Helia, I like, so Helios is Greek, is the god of the sun in Greek mythology. So it kind of goes off of the whole sun theme. So they can reach 9.8 feet tall. The tallest ever recorded was 30.1 feet. Which is why you always see the fall Instagram. What is it? Yeah, the fall Instagram pictures of people in the sunflower fields and the sunflowers are towering over them. They can grow very, very tall. They were actually first domesticated here in America. And then they were sent to Europe, which they became popular for sunflower oil. So the thing about sunflowers is everyone thinks the flower itself, that big flower that you see, is actually the flower head. It is made up of hundreds of little flowers, actually. So a flower head is a special type of inflorescence. So inflorescence is the shape of the flower. So they actually contain hundreds of little five petal flowers in there. Also, kind of just talk about a common myth that people see is the idea that sunflowers track the sun. You guys have heard of that before. I think we talked about it the last episode.
It's true. Not a myth.
It's no, no.
I talked to the sunflower yesterday. It's true.
It's true. It said so.
Yeah, I know. I cast Speak with Plants, and the sunflower was like, yo, dude, I got a turn for the sun. And I was like, good job, you. I'm proud of you. It was very positive.
It was a very positive. So the buds, the immature
like roses.
Buds.
Roses are not positive to talk to.
No. They just like to poison you.
And you got to watch out for the daffodils. They're the worst.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. A bunch of Regina Georges. Anyways, back to the myth of sunflowers.
So immature budding sunflowers do exhibit the behavior. However, the adult flowering heads are actually, they're fixed in place. They don't follow the sun. So speaking, we'll go keep with early gen, because I like talking about early gen flowers. We're talking about one of my personal favorite flowers, the corpse flower. We're talking about good old vile plume. Madison, you've seen that one before, haven't
you? It is Rafflesia. You got to give it the right name, Rafflesia.
Rafflesia Arnoldi.
Yeah.
Yep, is its full name. I like calling it the corpse flower.
I thought the corpse flower was the different one, because we have the corpse flowers in Cleveland at the zoo here. I thought the corpse flowers are the big ones that they peel apart.
Let me look.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm seeing it's called the stinking corpse lily.
That's it. Yep. Rafflesia is okay. The corpse lily, not the corpse flower.
The corpse. Okay. Titan
lilies
arum.
Are flowers. No, am I gaslighting?
No, but I'm saying like there's a plant called the corpse flower.
I don't believe in common names, so don't ask me.
Yeah.
Well, I do and I don't.
There is. Well, there's Titan.
Which is why from now on, we will only be referring to Jillian as her full name and not a common name.
There is, because there's Titan. Titan arum is named the corpse flower.
Okay.
But yes, they are another. They're a really cool flower. Yeah. I'm not going to get into the whole common name debate, because that's a pain, especially with plants, as we just figured out. So they are endemic to the rainforest of Borneo and Sumatra. They produce the largest individual flower on Earth, and it has a strong and unpleasant odor, which led it to its name, its common name. They are also a parasitic plant. So they have no leaves, no stems, no roots, or no chlorophyll, which is what helps produce energy in flowers. So they actually release thread-like strands that attach to tetrastigma vines, which is from the grape family and actually the sole host of these flowers, and they get their nutrients and water that way. And the smell of the flower is used as a way for pollinators to pollinate in it. But they're kind of interesting that they are an actual parasitic plant, which is so different than most other plants that we'll talk about today or have talked about already.
That's so interesting, considering the smell. I know that flies are often attracted to that kind of smell. I'm not familiar with other kinds of invertebrates that have been tested to be attracted to the specific compounds, I guess, that are released in the Rafflesia flower. But I'm thinking of, so this, the Rafflesia genus, do they all produce that smell? Do you know?
I know that it does. It's, what is it? I think Titan arum is also a part of that one. Is a part of that genus. Because they're all parasitic.
There's a whole group of them that.
Yeah, there's
that. Again, there's that's how 41 I knew of them. That's how I knew it wasn't the corpse flower, because we have one of them here at the Cleveland Zoo.
Yeah, there's 41 different species of Rafflesia. Yeah.
Oh, they're wonderful. All... I was just thinking, you know, as I consider evolution, you know, how many times different smells have arisen over evolutionary time. And I'm curious as to why more plants didn't develop this very strong, pungent smell, besides ginkgo trees and Bradford pears.
Yeah.
But do you think it's because it's almost like a specialization to attract certain types of insects, because you have fruits that are one type of aroma, right? You have the flowering plants that have a different type of aroma. Do you think it's just because this is like a specialization?
I think it's like a specialization in that part, because I know there's two species of they're carrion flies that pollinate that Rafflesia arnoldi. And then there's also, they talked about there's black ants that also help in the pollination of that, and also help in actually destroying the flower at the end, end of its lifespan. So it could be just that whole area. Because I know the Rafflesia, they're mostly related to Southeastern Asia. So it could just be that a specialization in the area, because they have pollinators in that area that are specialized in that type. But I don't fully know. But it could be. That would make sense if it was a specialization in their evolution to have that.
Thank you for sharing that with me, Jared. For listeners at home, I do not know anything about plants. I have taken several botany classes throughout undergrad and graduate school and have struggled through every single one of them. So this is wonderful. I feel very joyful to be here.
I know is that I kill plants.
I do that too. But that was my master's thesis. That was my job, was to kill plants. So.
Mine is more that I tried to get them to grow and give me delicious fruit, and it does not work.
It's okay. We tried growing blueberries here this year, and that didn't go very well here at all.
We read about it last year, because I had one bush and it didn't do anything for 2 years. And so we read that they need to have a group. So last year we built a new box that is, I want to say 10 by 4. And it's just blueberry plants.
We had them up on the side of our one bank.
They get tall. I mean, those things get like 6-7 feet tall.
We had them on the side of our bank, which normally would have been fine. There would have had plenty of room to grow. I just think the sunlight wasn't hitting them as well as they should have, and that's what ended up killing them. So the next plant I want to talk about is, well, we're going to talk about charum. I think I want to talk about two cultures, like kind of significant plants. So we're going to talk about charum and good old cherubi. So they are based on the cherry blossom, which, of course, is culturally significant to Japan. I know we have a huge festival in D.C. every year with the cherry blossom trees. If you ever get the chance to go, I highly recommend it. It's really cool. But they are found in temperate zones all across Northern Hemisphere, which especially is in Asian countries. So charum is most likely based off of the Japanese charum, cherry, or sakura. They produce small cherries, which are actually unpalatable or edible. You can't actually eat them, which I know.
Unless you're my foster daughter and you're going to try anyways. And
And the cool thing is, you know, with Pokemon mechanic wise, so charum has two forms. It has that like shrouded up covered form that only comes out to, and then when it gets exposed to the harsh sunlight from drought or sunny day, it changes into that blossom form. So that's an actual phenomena that's actually found in plants. It's called it's basically, it's a response to stimuli. So actually, when you have a change in the intensity of light, that actually causes it to grow and causes that growth, so you see that pole blossoming effect, which I thought was kind of really cool that they actually took a real plant mechanic and a plant phenomena and actually put it into the game.
So we call those the introvert and extrovert forms.
Yes. I've actually never thought of it that way, but I actually really like that.
It's just a bad joke. It's not, yeah.
Oh, I actually honestly kind of is. It's a bad joke, but it's
also not what introvert and extrovert means, but pop psychology, yo.
That's true.
That's so interesting. It's a light sensitive response. And that's true for real cherries.
Yeah.
It's based on like the light, I guess, intensity or the light level.
Yeah. It's the light intensity.
There are flowers that only, I'm trying to remember, was it lunar flowers? Where they don't like sunlight. There are flowers that open at night, correct?
Yes.
So,
yeah,
like
moon flowers.
They do have light sensitivity as an adaptive trait. My understanding is that it has to do with it's like conservation of energy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a pressure.
I only ask because I was reading today about smog in Eastern Asian countries, and I myself am from an Eastern Asian country, and you know, pollution is a big topic, and not just in Eastern Asia, but in many places. And so, considering cherry blossoms being quite significant to many Eastern Asian cultures, thinking about how that pollution might be impacting that, or if there's only specific areas of specific pollution levels where the cherry blossoms bloom, or tracking the bloom time. I'm sure there's research papers on this.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just a very it was a thought that came to my head considering light and what's impacting light levels these days.
Oh yeah, and now that is really interesting, and I haven't really thought about that with the whole pollution, especially in those all over the world, but in those countries, of how it would affect that, the whole blossoming effect. But yeah, no, there's got to be research out there. Someone has to have done it, especially with the significance of those flowers. Someone has to be out there tracking that and trying to figure out what's going to happen. So another culturally significant flower, another one that's kind of going to be interesting to talk about, is Floette. So talking about the Phlorgis line, Floette is the middle evolution. Yeah. So it is based on either red trillium, which is a type of flower, or a lily, especially when you're looking at the internal flower Floette, which is the form that A has from Pokemon X and Y, and most likely Legends of ZA fame when that game gets released. So Floette, looking at the internal flower form, has a really cool connection because it could be based on a red spider lily, which ties in the whole X and Y cycles of life and death. So in the Buddhist culture, this flower is known as Lycoris radiata Higanbana. And Higan, I know I'm butchering all this, so sorry. Is the name of the Buddhist holiday that's around the autumn equinox. So as a tradition, many people pay tribute to their ancestors and will line their tombs with red spider lilies. And this is a huge thing in Japan, especially. So that's kind of like the whole connection there of the whole red spider lily being connected to, of course, it was introduced in X and Y and being brought into that game as a nod to that holiday and that ceremony.
I just want to point out that I think it's funny. The common name is the spider lily, but lyco is a prefix meaning wolf. And I only recognize that since wolf spiders are lycosidae. I was like, I have this wolf spider flower.
I guess. I don't. I know. I like that one you say that because it doesn't make sense. Because when you look at like sunflower, it made sense with its Latin with helia. And then you look at this and it's like, hi, my name's, I'm the spider lily, but I guess I'm the spider, yeah, the wolf spider lily.
I'd be interested to know the origins, too, considering common names can change across cultures, and oftentimes Latin systems, not often, I would say almost 100% of the time, Latin systems are based on Western and Eurocentric views of science, so I'd be interested to know the history. Although I have a whole rant for a different day about all of the plants named after What's-His-Face, who pretended he stole tea from China and brought it to the British. I think his name is Robert or something. But anyways, that's for a different day.
I had to think about that. I was like, I don't remember that one.
You know what? Scientists can be just as bad at naming things as historians. So let's just leave it at that.
That is very true.
It is true. The Seven-Year War, named so because it lasted 9 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Great name, not, bro. Great name.
Yep. Well, I think the last flower I want to talk about, let's talk about Lilligant. I actually kind of am disappointed in myself because I didn't look up Hisuian Lilligant, which is my favorite version of Lilligant.
What, seriously, guy, come on. I love, I know, Lilligant. It's like one of, I know, my absolute favorites.
I like Lilligant, but I don't, I don't, I've used, I never used it in the original game, but when I got the Hisuian version, I was very, very happy about being able to use that. But Lilligant, so Lilligant's kind of interesting because it's based on a multitude of flowers and not just lilies, which Lilium is the true, are the true of lilies. But also you can look at its, how it's shaped. It is based on carnations, pomelo flowers. The leaves on its body are actually more how it's like, how they're shaped are more based on like aromathy plants, like spearmint and peppermint. Though if you look at the petals that Lilligant has, it's more actually based on its actual namesake, which is lily. So lilies are a very important flower to a world culture. They normally found around the northern hemisphere, the temperate northern hemisphere. We use them as growing. They're an ornament. They're an ornamental flower. They look very prettily. They have a lot of different cultural significant in many different cultures, and they are, can also be used in aromatherapy because they have very relaxing smells, which I find really interesting. Because I will admit, I do love to smell flowers when I walk by. I do feel better after smelling them. We have Longwood Gardens is based in Kennington Square, Pennsylvania, and it's a fun place to go to. And they have a bunch of different types of lilies around, and it's always just good to go smell their like aromatherapy little session that they have out section, and it's just, oh, you feel so much better.
I would love to show Lilligant to some of my botanist friends. I consider you one of those, Jared, but you're already looking at it. Because I think it, at least, and you can tell me your opinion, it almost looks like a really good representation of flower anatomy. Because a lot of those traits are exaggerated.
Yes.
Like the ovary and the calyx and your corolla, and not to throw a bunch of scientific jargon out there, but when I put it side by side with like an anatomical chart, I'm like, oh, this would have been fun for me to have tried to use in the times I struggled with my plant-based courses.
It really is. I also think that's kind of an interesting flower, just an interesting Pokemon in general, because of it is a like culmination of so many different types of flowers. It has so many different parts of like different types that you can see in it. So I think that's kind of just really interesting in that whole setup of like, oh, it could be based on a carnation, or it has like, when he talks about the smells that it produces, those are like your aromatherapy plants. So like your spearmints or your peppermints or other really good smelling plants, or the fact that its name is, well, it's lily, it's Lilligant. So it's based on a, let's flower is the petals and the curvature of how those flowers are on the top of its head. Its petals are based on a lily. And I think it's just kind of a, I think Game Freak just said, we're going to make an actual flower Pokemon and we're going to stick a whole bunch of flowers on it, just different parts, and just say, here's what you get, guys. It was that whole, oh, it's Gen 5, so it's the whole, let's redo a whole lot of everything and let's see what goes from there. And I think it kind of shows, but I really do like Lilligant. And the whole idea with like the aromatherapy is like, you can see it in its Pokedex entries, like the fragrance of the garland on its head has a relaxing effect. And Madison, you would probably fit with this if you kill plants. It withers if a trainer does not take good care of it.
Well, I would never let that happen to Lilligant because mine is named Scarlet and I love her.
Do you have any theories as to why you can only have a female Lilligant? And I know, here's what I learned from my plant classes. You can have monoecious plants and dioecious plants. Monoecious meaning they only have like male or female parts, but dioecious plants, di being two, ecious two, house meaning they have, you know,
they have both parts.
They have both parts. And so here, this is a great example of a monoecious
monoecious plant.
Yeah.
So could it be though, like, because we know that like, I know we talked about it with whiptails, that there are definitely organisms out there that the entire family class, I don't know, you guys know more of this than I do, but I do know we've talked about this, that there are species, there's a word, that are only female, that, I mean, because essentially, you know, like there's, I mean, what I think of the whiptails, you know, they can use sperm from other species and they still reproduce their, you know, their exact whiptail. I mean, can't that happen with plants too then?
I feel
or
like
is
plants...
it, or is it she can just reproduce on her own. She doesn't need no man. She is strong enough to just take care of it all on her own.
Jared, I'll defer to your expertise, but my first thought is that sex in plants is so complicated beyond what we think about with like animals.
It's really complicated. I can have an entire just hours long discussion and I don't even fully know all of it with plants, because you have pollinators that when they go from talking about dioecious plants, they'll go from the anthers of one plant, which of the same of that plant, of that flower, which is where all the pollen is. And then they'll move it to where the ovum is kept of that on that same plant. Or it could be with monoecious plants, they could go from one plant and then move it to the pollen to another plant. And that's how you have your, in general terms, how plants can reproduce, how they have the whole fertilization process begins. With Lilligant, I'm probably guessing... how they decide to come up with it is, I don't want to say going off of Balbakidia, but there is a whole interview that they talked about when the person that created Lilligant, she came up with the idea while looking at Lilligant at her home with lilies, but she's also designed to give the impression of an extravagant princess. So that's probably might be why they're keeping that whole theme of just having it be 100% female, is to keep up with the idea of just the princess. That might be why they're kind of keeping 100%, just doing it as 100% female. So we, of course, were all introduced to normal, to Lilligant, introduced in Gen 5, but due to Legends Arceus, we now have another version of Lilligant, so Hisuian Lilligant. So Hisuian Lilligant is based on the Allium genus of plants. So the cool thing about that is Allium used to actually be a part of Liliaceae, which is the lily family, but due to taxonomical reasons, it was actually removed from the Liliaceae family. I don't know why. I'm not going to get into a whole taxonomy debate, because why people move groups of flowers or plants from one family to another is a whole different thing. But Hisuian Lilligant has a lot of cultural significance. It's used in So Allium is based on wild onion. So wild onion has a lot of traditional uses in medicine and has a lot of cultural significance. So I think that was kind of cool, though, that they brought Lilligant into, they have got a different version of Lilligant that I like how it's all now been kind of separated, that you had Lilligant used to evolve into Hisuian Lilligant, which back in back then it was part of the lily family, and now it is now not part of the lily family, so now you have it evolve into a true lily, which I thought was kind of interesting just taxonomically looking at it.
Now, I'm a little skeptical of Hisuian Lilligant, and this is only because the feet on it look like anthers.
Oh, look like anthers? I haven't looked at Hisuian Lilligant in a while. I just know, like, the bulb, like, that white bulb head on it is more based on, like, what a wild onion would look like. And the body is, like, of a broad-shaped allium or wild onion. So it has the whole, like, the long elongated stem that you would see, like, on, like... Because Lilligant's almost, like, what, human-sized in the games. So it'd be, like, a longer stem is what you'd get from it.
Interesting.
Because wild onion is a, in general, wild onion plants can be very tall. So I think it's kind of interesting looking at how it's shaped.
Like, but yeah, like the bulb. Big old green onion there, right?
Yeah, Yeah, it's just Lilligan's head. The Hisuian Lilligan's head is the bulb of the white bulb of the onion.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you meant more because the leaves kind of look like
the leaves. You do get the leaves.
Yeah,
you get the leaves. The leaf shape of the allium plants. But yeah, also the you normally have that bulb. That white bulb is what you'd find with a wild onion. So you get that whole. That's the shape for its head.
Got it.
Yep.
Is that why it stings so bad when it kicks?
Yes. Good old. I love Hisuian Lilligan. I was so happy when they introduced
Violet
her.
Violet has a plush of one, and that is one of her favorites.
It's a fantastic Pokemon.
Peak design. We need more grass fighting types.
Yeah, we need more quad weak to flying. Just one brave bird does it all. Look, because it's only... This is off topic, but Chestnut and Hisuian Lilligan are the only two grass fighting types. Oh, Breloom, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Breloom doesn't count. It's a mushroom.
You do not forget Breloom. Breloom is the king of Spore.
No, that's Amoongus.
It is now. So anyways, that was great. I have more questions about flowers than I thought I did when we started.
Plants are just interesting. They are really cool to learn about. And I've always been fascinated by them. That's why I studied them for so long and still continue to. I love them. They're just fascinating to learn more about. I am definitely more of a grass guy. I like a lot of like the grasses. That's what I worked in a lot when I was out west, was with prairie grasses. But flowers,
just like
I do.
Willie Nelson?
No, not that type of grass. That's why I was. Unfortunately, it's a really bad weed science joke in there. But I do love flowers. They are fascinating to learn more about and just how complex they can really be. But that's all I had for today.
Thank you so much for that, Jared. I had a good time.
Thank you. It was nice having you on here. I finally got to do an episode with you.
Yeah, I'm glad. I know. I barely know anything about you, and I'm here.
He's like, I'm Jared.
I do plants, and I do invasive species. I love Legos. As I look over, my orchid and my bird of paradise are both sitting up there on the shelf to the right of me. But... Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Madison and Jillian, for being on with me.
Yeah.
Madison, as normal, you're always on here with me.
Sure.
Yep. So we'll see you guys next time.
Au revoir.
Bye.